We're at a high of 70 degrees on the outside. This is AM 1270 WHLD, the Citadel Broadcasting Communications Station. I suggest you stay tuned for this great program next.
When I get older, losing my head, many years from now, will you still be sending me a valentine, birthday greetings, bottle of wine? If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
It's Monday, September 20th, and welcome to today's show. I was just talking with my guests about the theme song and how the theme song was in place, I think, before the show was. This is Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? And the answer to that question is a lot. And my listeners, especially the older adults and caregivers out there, shouldn't settle for less. Last week, we talked about caregivers and caregiving with two terrific guests, Miriam Callahan of the Erie County Caregivers Coalition and Tom DeLowry, coordinator of the Niagara Caregiver Network. Today's show is dedicated to spirituality and aging. A quick reminder that the phone lines are open for your calls at 855-6848. If you can't get through or don't want to talk on the air, you can email your questions or request for information to the station, WHLD, 1270 AM, 225 Delaware Avenue, Buffalo, 14202, or email me at drstall@whatshouldyouexpect.com. A self-assessment booklet, caregiver's handbook, and additional information related to the topics discussed on the shows can be found at the website, whatshouldyouexpect.com. The phone number at the station again, for your calls, is 855-6848, and we're here to answer your questions. I have in the studio today Mrs. Carol Wolf and Dr. Reverend James Lewis III, to talk about spirituality and aging. Mrs. Wolf is the Associate Spiritual Director of the St. Joseph Center for Spirituality and a member of UB Spirituality and Healthcare Committee. She also has a regular column in After 50 magazine called Faith in Action. Reverend Lewis is the pastor of the Bishop Jermaine Wesley Logan Memorial AME Zion Church and director of pastoral care at Erie County Medical Center. Reverend Lewis, I'm also impressed that you are welcomed at many churches of varied affiliations as a kind and loving minister, unafraid to go where others dare not, ministering to those who would normally be passed by, which can certainly also include the elderly. Welcome, Carol. Welcome, Reverend Lewis.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit more about yourselves and your professional and personal missions?
Well, as far as my professional experience, I was in healthcare administration for 30-plus years, have been retired for 5 years, and have really enjoyed putting together and doing workshops, retreats, and a variety of topics, spirituality, and working with many of the aging people, people that are growing older, to grow gracefully. When I heard this song, part of the line was, when you are 64.
Right.
Well, I have 1 year to go.
One. You didn't have to divulge that. That wasn't a prerequisite for coming on the show.
But life is good. And
that's good.
There is a lot that people can expect.
Well, I know you're doing a lot of good things, and you do it with enthusiasm and a true interest in the people you're trying to reach. And you, Reverend Lewis.
Well, thank you for the invitation to be here, along with my co-host, Carol Wolf, for our TV show, Challenge for the 21st Century. And you've appeared on our show, and we've been blessed to work with people in all stages of life over the Grace Manor Healthcare Facility, as well as the Skilled Nursing Facility at the Erie County Medical Center, and the Erie County Home and Infirmary, Sheehan Hospital. God has just blessed me to be able to work with so many different people in so many different stages of their life. And then I happened to hold a hat of a caretaker. My mother and father. My father is 84, my mother is 79, going on 16 and 17. And it's a challenge, to say the least, in order to watch the life go full cycle. What goes around comes around. My mother stopped me the other day and asked me, who do I think I am? Her father? Because some of the things that she wants to do, I can't let her do. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And my father, we had to take the car keys away from him because he's about 80% blind. He can't see, and my mother can't walk, so he would carry her to the car and she would tell him where to go.
Well, it's a reversal of roles, different. As we get older, we never stop encountering new challenges.
Actually, I think we become the sandwich generation. We're in the middle, our age group, where we're taking care of our parents, our aging parents, and sometimes still helping our adult children with problems that they incur.
Amen.
That's true.
That's true. That's all I can say to that. Because well, some of them might have left the nest, but they haven't gone for good.
Well, and then they bring their children along also,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Well, the word spirituality can mean different things to different people. A related question is the difference between spirituality and religiosity, or spirituality and religion. I spoke with Rabbi Ronald Kopelman, a rabbi of my synagogue, Temple Beth El, earlier today about this, and we're going to hear him now.
I think that in order to talk about aging and spirituality, we need to talk about two things, spirituality and religiosity. From a Jewish standpoint, spirituality is a quest to somehow become closer to God or to get to know God a little bit better. Religiosity, on the other hand, is something we would call piety or observance of rituals.
Now, how do you see that changing or different or the same as people get older?
If we consider spirituality to be a quest or seeking, seeking is most often associated with youth, while piety is more of a doing and is often associated with age. What's interesting, however, is that in Judaism, Kabbalah, which is the Jewish mystic or spiritual tradition, is described as a discipline that one shouldn't even undertake until age 40.
Well, there we heard from Rabbi Kopelman, and he mentioned the Kabbalah, which I think more people have heard about it since Madonna started practicing Kabbalah than any rabbi ever made it popular. But why don't we talk about that, spirituality versus religion, and let's also talk about people, whether people can be spiritual and not necessarily even affiliate with a formal religion. Carol?
Well, I have discovered through the years that what Rabbi talked about is that in the aging process, people don't really start to think about those things until they're in their 40s, going on to their 50s, where sometimes then they start to feel a restlessness and something isn't quite working out for them. And so they may have a background of a religion, but they become more spiritual and more seeking. And I believe that the spiritual nature crosses all denominations and unifies us, where oftentimes the religious nature or denomination has a tendency to separate us and divide us.
Most of my experience in trying to separate religiosity from spirituality comes in the form of maybe working with people that are coming out of the highlands of affliction, that have been addicted to substances or different things, and we try to explain religiosity as anything you do religiously. And so we found that people take drugs and drink religiously. So now we need to move them to the next level. And the rabbi hit it on the head when he said that it's an action. And sometimes we can engage in religiosity just by going through the actions and not even realizing why we're going through the motions. Some people can sit, stand, cross themselves, and go through all these changes and still be hell on wheels.
Well, that's the old ritual versus meaning. And
absolutely.
Do you practice what you preach and practice what you pray as well?
Or do we understand?
Do we understand?
Because the whole generation was brought up and trained to do certain things. We were altar boys, altar girls, and then we went through confirmation, and then we were trained in different things in the Christian faith. And a lot of times they grew up and they never realized what it was. Now, I understand what you're saying is that they reach 40 and they start to come to an awareness of themselves and reach for spirituality. But I think we waste a lot of time in the youthful years by not explaining to them the rituals of religiosity and why they're doing things. Then they stray away, and then a lot of times we find them coming back in that sandwich mode in recovery, in detox and rehabilitation senses, and preparing themselves. And it's not just for young people. We have octogenarians that are addicted to drugs that have to be careful how they live their life. And some of them are, you know, alcoholics. And so we have to be careful how we deal with a lot of people, especially as they age, and that they engage themselves in a closer walk with God, whoever you choose to call him. And that's what we call spirituality.
Well, the parallel between doing alcohol and drugs religiously and a path to improvement and cure, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, actually does take a religious approach
right.
to helping people that do have an alcoholism problem. And you're right that in older adults and the elderly, alcoholism in particular is a high percentage problem.
It certainly would make sense more often than not to work with teenagers to explain what spirituality is all about and have them be conscious and aware of seeking that purpose in their life from the very beginning.
Yeah, I can't agree more. And actually, it's ironic. I had this discussion with my daughter just the other day. It was yesterday. She was done with Sunday school, and I picked her up from there, and she told me that she's ready for a bat mitzvah, which is over 2 years away. And so she began to recite a prayer in Hebrew that she will need to know. And I said, Lauren, do you know what the words mean? And she said, no, not really. And I said, well, something very useful that you might want to do is, as you learn the prayer, how to say it, also learn what it means. And
right.
this particular prayer is called the Ashrei, and Ashrei means happy. And we went through the first few words, and hopefully we'll continue with that so that she will have, some meaning behind the ritual that she will be performing on the day she has her bat mitzvah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Imagine a whole segment of our population that went to church and didn't know what the priest was saying.
That's right. And I think that that goes true for a lot of churches. Kids don't really have the opportunity to discuss and to discover what things mean. They're not respected enough to listen, for adults to listen to them and be able to answer questions.
Yeah. And it's hard enough even if when it's in English.
Yes,
imagine what it was like when they did services
in Latin.
And still to this day, Jewish congregations, specifically mostly conservative and Orthodox, have much of their service in Hebrew.
Yeah.
And how many people understand the Hebrew that they're saying? Even if they know how to read it, do they really understand the words?
Right.
So, so far we've talked about spirituality versus religiosity, meaning versus practice and action, how we need to perhaps pull the two together. Now, how do things change from youth to middle age to older age? And our focus, of course, in this show is older age. So we want to see how things change over the years as people grow into old age. And I found in researching for the show that King Solomon, in his youth, wrote the Song of Songs. in his maturity, the more philosophical Proverbs, and then in his older age, Ecclesiastes, from which, Reverend Lewis, I'm going to ask you to read an excerpt now.
So appreciate your vigor in the days of your youth, before those days of sorrow come, and those years arrive of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Before sun and light and moon and stars grow dark, and the clouds come back again after the rain. When the guards of the house become shaky, and the men of valor are bent, and the maids that grind grown few are idle, and the ladies that peer through the windows grow dim, and the doors to the street are shut, with the noise of the hand mill growing fainter, and the song of the bird growing feebler, and all the strains of music dying down, when one is afraid of heights, and there is terror on the road, before the silver cord snaps, and the golden bowl crashes, the jar is shattered at the spring, and the jug is smashed at the cistern, and the dust returns to the ground as it was, and the life breath returns to God who bestowed it. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 1 through 7.
Yes, and this seems to me somewhat pessimistic and perhaps realistic outlook at growing old, especially from the perspective of the time in which it was written. Any comments on that and how this kind of outlook and from what you know about King Solomon and his different perspectives throughout his life, is this reflective of how people change throughout the years?
I think it is, because he starts off with an amazing view from hindsight. So appreciate your vigor in the days of your youth, before those days of sorrow come and those years arrive of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. The things I used to do, it's not that I don't do them, I can't do them anymore. So what he's saying is get the most out of life while you can. And we find a lot of people that have grown to an older age that regret mistakes that they made in their youth, yet they don't find itching ears to hear them to try to help somebody along the way, because the majority of people don't want to hear from older folks. They want to try to find their own way of doing things as it was with that generation. So as we move through the different paradigm shifts of life on a personal basis, things become less important to us that we thought were really important.
And usually the material things.
Absolutely. He who has the most toys wins. At some point in your life, you realize that that's foolishness.
You don't take your toys with you.
You don't take them. That's why you see grandma just, honey, just take what you want, baby. Yeah. Take everything. You know, it doesn't matter anymore as they get closer to a spiritual walk with God. They realize, I don't need this junk.
Well, you mentioned about having children listen to older people.
Right.
And learn from the wisdom of the perspective of a life lived. And what's happened now? Do we not do that? Is the condition, are the conditions not conducive for the kids to listen? Have we lost respect
for
our elders?
We lost a whole generation. We lost a whole generation. Each century that we go through, we lose a generation through war, through famine, through some type of problem. Now we're losing them through drugs, through alcohol, HIV and AIDS. And sometimes you'll find out that cigarettes and things, we'll find out that grandparents are now raising children. And where we used to value adults and the older people and keep them around, now we've got nursing homes that are just full of our older Americans, older people in our family. We're so busy with our life. The mother's working, the father's working, the children's working. Nobody has time to be a care provider for our older parents that took care of us. What I say is the math is all messed up. One mother can have seven children, but seven children can't take care of one mother. What has been revived in some of our schools is a grandparent program, where they're going to get these people out of nursing homes and they're bringing them into like the grammar school setting, and making these people
daycare setting, like foster grandparents,
and they're making them
a dynamite combination.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things that I encourage people to do when I do programs at the Elderwood Systems or any of the adult senior places is everyone has that box of pictures. And it sits in the back of their home. And when they pass on, it moves to the next person, to the next person. Is to take that box of pictures and get it out and start putting it in some order. For the older adult to do that and be able to work with their children and their grandchildren and tell them the stories.
Yeah.
Tell them the stories of their life and put it in a scrapbook and leave a legacy. We all have something as we age that we want to leave to our children. And sometimes it's patience, sometimes it's a loving personality, a feistiness, whatever. To be able to take the time, as you say, people don't have the time, but be intentional about the time to spend with the children and the grandchildren and tell the stories.
And often the visits to nursing homes, let's say, are without clear purpose. And if you go with a project in mind, then the person who goes and visits, I think, gets more enjoyment out of it. The person who's visited,
it
also
won't be tedious.
It won't be tedious. You won't be at a loss for words. And you know, there's a natural embarrassment, guilt, all these different feelings come about when loved ones are in an institution, or even if you have a loved one, older loved one, living alone.
Yeah.
And you go for a visit. And
let me share with you institutions. 1989, new chaplain, just got my collar on, and I charge into the hospital, and I get to the skilled nursing facility, and I tell them, I'm going to do this, that. I'm going to help you people out, and I'm going to be able to take care of you. They said, time out. Come here, young fella. Sit down. We have a council here where we make decisions ourselves. We're old, we're not crazy, and all of us aren't deaf. And we have some of our senses left. And we can tell you what we need better than you can ascertain on your own.
You know, I think I was told the same thing when I went in as a medical student and thought I was going to cure the world. We need to listen and involve the people who we're supposedly providing care for. We're here to assist, to bring out the best in people.
Sure.
My grandmother passed away the month before she would have turned 100. She was in a nursing home for about 20 years. And when we visit, she always talked about the old people in the home. And her mind was great. Her body was just breaking down. Right. And when we would say to her, Grandma, you're older than everyone here, she'd say, I tried that once. It wasn't my bag.
Well, you mentioned...
So it's attitude.
You mentioned about leaving things for future generations, and often that is lost. I know all my grandparents are gone now, and I know there's bits and pieces of their voices on some videos, but to have... A lasting remembrance. One thing I read about a little while ago is leaving an ethical will, not just a will of what you're going to give to who, but to write down, either do it on an audio tape or write down your ethical will, what you hope your legacy is going to leave behind. To be a good person, to help others like my father did, my mother did, that sort of thing.
Well, we encourage everyone to write your own story. You don't have to be 80, 60, 70 years old. You said that, you know, like when I was a kid, you know, they said we wouldn't live to be 30, you know? And then I got to be 30, they said, well, you'll never make it to 50. Well, we made it to 50, so now what is old? But we need to write our own story, because there's some things that we haven't told anybody that we need to jot down. At the hospital, we give them a book, Be Prepared. And it's a journal that the patient themselves can write down. They don't have to reveal it to anybody until after they're gone. They can have it sealed and put it away somewhere. But sometimes in writing your own story, you find out more about yourself than you even remember yourselves. And I found that some of the people that have taken this time and written their own story, they have lived long enough to turn it into some of the universities as life experience.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been able to get college credit. And some of them that were mm-hmm. called off to the war were able to complete their GED. Some even got honorary degrees because of all of the things they've done in their life. They started businesses. They took care of people. They built things. Some of them we found out had even invented things that were stolen from them, but they right. were there during the invention process, and they could recite the whole method, the process. And once you're able to do that, people can't refute you.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a healing process that goes on, too, when you write your story.
Yes.
As you start, as you said, they start to remember things. And those, that spiritual nature wells up in a person and will remember sometimes the things that perhaps are there that they regret. And at that point, they have an opportunity to think about it and sometimes do something about it. If they can, make it right, or at least send a note to somebody that they haven't thought about in a long time.
Absolutely.
Those are the healing processes that are important to go on.
And that's a key point of spirituality in order to bring about healing. And sometimes when we get down to the essence of all of the things that we deal with, it's about healing. They carried a man to Jesus, tore a hole in the roof and let him down. And they were waiting for Jesus to lay his hand on him and do something miraculous. And he spoke and he said, "My friend, thy sins are forgiven." And inside of all of the things that was going on with him, he needed forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
He needed closure. And after that, he was all right. He was healed. And you'd be surprised how many people are in some of the conditions they're in because they are carrying a weight they should have let go years ago.
Yes, that's absolutely true. And the thing, the other story that I particularly appreciate is when Jesus is at the pool in Bethsaida, and the man who had been there going every day for 38 years, waiting to go in the pool to be healed, and Jesus says to him, "Do you want to be healed?"
Right.
And that's a question that sometimes we have to ask ourselves.
And our parents.
Yes.
And then, right, and then it comes back to action.
Yeah.
Are we willing to take the personal action?
Well, on that story, he had to ask him, "Do you want to be healed?" Because there were ramifications that came with the healing.
Oh, yeah.
Because for 38 years, he found a way to work around the system and have people bring him there and feed him and give him money and take care of him. Now, after 38 years, do you want to change?
Ah.
And we have some people that have been sick a long time, and they've gotten used to their sickness. They have become mentally lame as well as physically lame.
Yep.
And
definitely.
They do not want that process to change.
Or spiritually lame.
Or spiritually
yes.
lame, and they don't want to change it.
Because it's easier to just look at material things
mm-hmm.
yeah.
rather than look at the hard questions. And some of the things I ask my patients, and that's on a older adult self-assessment booklet that I mentioned at the beginning of the show, questions like, what embarrasses you the most? We talked about what regrets do you have in your life? Mm. What are your fears and worries now? And what goals do you have at this point in your life?
Yeah.
And it's never too late to set goals. Now, let me play a little bit more of my discussion with Rabbi Kopelman, and then we'll talk a little bit more about that and take a break and go on from there.
I find that when people get to an age where their parents start passing away, they really begin to think about their own life and what their place in the world is and how all this religion stuff that they've learned begins to filter into it.
It's almost like it takes a shock to bring people back and to start thinking again along those lines.
It really starts begging the question of who am I, what am I, and what is my place in the world. These are spiritual questions. And once you get focused on that, I think it begins that process of I'm not perfect, I'm not immortal, I'm not everything that I used to think I was when I was 17. There's a famous story that about the woman on the subway in New York whose kids are just raising all kinds of noise and running all over the bus, and she's not doing anything about it until a gruff old man goes up to her and says, "Can't you control those kids?" And she just looks at him and apologizes and says, "I'm sorry, I'm coming from my father's funeral."
So Rabbi Kopelman is talking about how we, at some point in life, we learn that we're not perfect, that we can't control everything. And what do you have to say about that story, about the woman who realizes that her parent died, and she doesn't have total control over things, as the example, her kids running loose on the train?
I think in our encounters every day, every conversation that we have with other people, we have no idea what is going on inside of them, what struggles they're going through, what hurts. And so we can't be judgmental about them or criticize or that until we understand. And when you say to somebody, "How are you?" Do you really want to hear it?
Right.
And sometimes a person, the way they say it, all the other one's response is, "Fine."
I'm fine.
And move on. But if we really want to make a difference, we need to be willing to listen.
One of the things we learned early, and we teach it to our chaplains, is the ministry of presence. That sometimes you don't have to say anything when you enter into a room. And sometimes just your very presence
just being there
speaks volumes. And that we don't go in and ask people, "How are you?"
That's right.
You know, we greet them, "Hello.
It's nice to see
you. It's a nice day. It's good to see you." And we try to stay as positive. We know that they have some issues there in the hospital. But I'm reminded from that story that how upset I used to be when I was growing up, because my mother was the recycling queen even before they had a name for it. She would make us reuse tin foil 20, 30 times. There was a drawer full of used tin foil.
You had to wash it too, probably, right?
Wash the tin foil and put it in the drawer. And if she came in there and saw you with a new piece of tin foil, she would have a fit. My father would rather fix shoes than buy them.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't understand why I was the only one in school with newspaper and cardboard in the bottom of my shoes. I said, "Why can't I just get new shoes like all the other kids?" And I always wanted to just throw stuff away, because that meant affluence or something. Or there would, and if I threw something away, it always meant that there would always be more, until my grandmother died. Then I realized that there are just some things that there is no more of.
That's right.
And
that's
you
right.
come to a point that that's it. Then I started to appreciate recycling. And my wife has dachshunds, and one of them got sick, and I said it would be cheaper to get a new dog than to try to fix the old dog.
That's
and
dangerous.
By the time she calmed down, I realized
PETA people aren't listening.
Yeah, that there are just some things that you need to keep. And no matter how much it cost, it made sense to take care of the old dog. And if we took care of the old dog, you know we should take care of our parents, our grandparents, and the elderly people that come into our lives.
The hardest part about that, though, is when your parents, as they're aging, start to get difficult, whether it's Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever you want to call it.
Attitude.
Sometimes they are hard to deal with.
Well, and that's where admitting that you're not perfect and seeking mm-hmm. help is important. So,
right.
you know, we come back to admitting that we have imperfections, we have limits to what we can do. And that there's other people going through the same thing.
Yeah.
And if we all band together and talk about it and help each other through it, it'll be that much better. Well, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to continue our talk.
Gonna buy me a long white road. Yes, and Lord, help me home. Gonna buy me a long way.
wide road. Yes, Lord, get me home. And when I get my heavenly gown and I lay my burden down, I'm gonna get me a wide road to get me home. I'm gonna buy me two golden slippers. Yes, Lord, walk me home. I'm gonna buy me two golden slippers. Yes, and Lord, to walk me home. And when I get my slippers of gold, then the Lord will have my soul. I'm gonna get me two golden slippers, get me home. I'm gonna buy me two wings of silver. Yes, and Lord, to fly me home. I'm gonna buy me two wings of silver. Yes, and Lord, fly me home. And when I get my silvery wings and an angel choir will sing, I'm gonna get me two wings of silver, get me home. I'm gonna buy me a poor man's trouble. Yes, and Lord, help me home. I'm gonna buy me a poor man's trouble. Yes, and Lord, help me home. And when I get my trouble and woe, then homeward I will go. I'm gonna get a little trouble and woe to get me home. I'm gonna find me a smiling angel. Yes, and Lord, lead me home. I'm gonna get me a smiling angel. Yes, and Lord, lead me home. And when he takes me by the hand, I know the Lord will understand. I'm gonna get me a smiling angel to lead me home. I'm gonna get me a smiling angel to lead me home.
We're back now with Carol Wolf and Reverend James Lewis III talking about spirituality and aging. If you'd like to call and ask me or one of my guests a question, the phone number again is 855-6848. In preparing for this show, I came across a Jewish patient's Bill of Rights in a book called Judaism and Healing. A few excerpts. Right number 4, the Jewish patient has the right to engage in observance of Jewish ritual where not medically contraindicated. The hospital should recognize the psychological value of these activities in the same spirit as recreational and other amenities that are offered to the patient. And from right number 8, the medical team should welcome the participation and advice of the patient's spiritual advisor. Also, a recent self-assessment of older adults revealed that 64% of people living in a local senior apartment building said that, quote, their faith helped keep them going, end quote. Are medical professionals, Carol, Reverend Lewis, doing enough to bring spirituality and religion into the healing process?
I don't think so, no. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, too, because in 2001, the Joint Commission on Accreditation of Healthcare Organizations issued a spiritual assessment.
Now, this organization sets guidelines for hospitals, nursing homes, other types of health organizations as to how they should provide care.
Yes,
absolutely.
And one of their assessments is that there should be or could be a spiritual assessment, and they do have standards required.
Why don't you read those?
I'll read just a couple of them. Is who or what provides the patient with strength and hope? Just exactly what you had mentioned. Does the patient use prayer in their life? How does the patient express their spirituality? What type of spiritual or religious support does the patient desire? And what does suffering mean to a patient? What does dying mean? What are the patient's spiritual goals? Those are just a few of them. And I don't feel that very many physicians use any kind of a spiritual assessment in their history and physical when they do it. I know there are a few, and you could almost say it's a spiritual, social assessment when it comes to where do you get support and that. Right now, I know the committee that I'm on, the UB committee, Spirituality and Healthcare, that's one of the things that they are addressing is teaching medical students how to feel comfortable doing this. Not that they have to tell you or tell the patient where to go or how to receive any of this information, but just to get a feel for themselves.
I know in my practice, I try to at least ask a person mm-hmm. what their religion is, how strong is their faith, and if they would like me to touch base with their priest, rabbi, and have them come over or at least give a call mm-hmm. so that they could touch base with them. Is there anything else you would recommend as questions, specific questions that a doctor should ask, or even for a patient? If the doctor doesn't ask, what should the patient offer to the doctor?
I think sometimes that if the patient goes in to see a doctor and they are having problems coping with their illness, to ask the doctor what kind of recommendations, and it's something that the physician or the nurse practitioner or physician assistant should ask, how do you cope? Where are you finding information to cope? I know last week you had Tom DeLowry.
Right.
I'm going to be doing some of those Aging Well workshops. Those are workshops looking at both all three, body, mind, and spirit. How does a person cope with illness? Can they find this information? Does their local church have programs? There's the parish nurse wellness ministries that some churches and congregations are now getting involved in. But and oftentimes, I don't know how you have found in your local congregations, but some congregations don't address those issues of coping with illness.
Well, I know at Temple Bethel we have a group that's called Vador Vador, which in Hebrew means from generation to generation,
mm-hmm.
Trying to help people in the sandwich generation, the middle-aged mm-hmm. adults caring for older adults, to help older people cope with what they're going mm-hmm. through. Now, Reverend James, you're head of pastoral care at Erie County Medical Center. What do you see in terms of how doctors and doctors in training and other health professionals deal with spiritual issues? And is it brought into play like any other recreational or other amenity, as mentioned in the Jewish Patients Bill of Rights, that is meant to help someone feel better, get better?
Well, to answer your initial question, no, they're not doing enough. But since 1995, with the Joint Commission, we've established a spirituality assessment form in the hospital. Developing a spirituality assessment form is one thing. Then waiting for doctors, medical students to be trained to use these things is another. Since that time, in 1998, I believe, they started having medical students, third and fourth year shadow chaplains, to increase their awareness in bedside ministry and to make sure that they had some spiritual base to work from and to find out what their spirituality is. A lot of the doctors had become so steeped in science that they had lost their spiritual bearing, and they really thought that they had done all that they could do to make themselves into who they are and realize that there was a greater power than themselves. This was never more evident, I believe, in 1992. I started the hospital in 1990, and we had a Jehovah's Witness come into the emergency room that was in a terrific accident. And they said, he's a Jehovah's Witness, don't give him any blood. And the doctor said, if he comes to this emergency room, he's getting blood. So they gave him blood. They took him to court, and they finally battled it out and said that if they refuse blood, they're not refusing treatment, And if they're Jehovah's Witness, that you can't give them blood. And they said that this was under the spiritual mandate that you're disrespecting their wishes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't have a sense of personal spirituality or religion guiding you as a healthcare professional,
yeah,
it certainly behooves us as doctors, nurses, social workers to respect the spiritual needs and desires of our patients.
Absolutely. But it's getting better. And Joint Commission has established certain standards for emotional care. And if they don't say spirituality, they say emotional care, and that's what they mean, as to how are you dealing with the emotional attitude and the situation of this particular patient. If you have diagnosed somebody and told them that they're dying, then there's an emotional need. How are you fulfilling that? Spirituality is one of the key ingredients in trying to address end-of-life decisions and where somebody should go as far as trying to make preparation and in bringing family members and support people and all of those things together.
And that's the forum you usually see spirituality come into play most is in the dying process, mm-hmm. but there's a body of literature now that's been accumulating. There's the traditional faith healers that heal solely through faith, but also some literature, formal medical literature, that demonstrates the power of prayer,
right,
and even demonstrates body chemistry, physiology that changes when someone activates their spiritual process.
Well, when you were talking about the science and the scientific part of physicians, over the past 10-15 years now, yes, there are many more studies that have been documented that prayer and a spiritual dimension does make a tremendous difference in the outcomes in a person's healing. Not necessarily curing them, but in helping them through the process. Dr. Koenig is one of the people. There are many studies now that have been done, that have been documented. And so I think physicians are now starting to take a look at this and thinking that maybe this is something they need to think more about.
And especially bringing it back to the context of geriatric care, where there aren't as many specifically curative things to do for someone. How do we provide curative things to help reduce the disease of illness? Not the disease itself, but
right.
the disease, the emotional suffering, even the physical suffering, where if you can use a little bit of religion pulled into play, or a little bit of faith, spirituality, whatever you want to call it, you bring that into play as something else that can help get a patient thinking in the right direction, and perhaps things will start moving in the right direction.
Well, we have to emphasize the fact that as we grow older, it's a part of life. And then we have to explain to people over again that death is a part of life, and that death is not our enemy, but our friend. For those of us that are steeped in religiosity and spirituality, we realize that death to us is not the end of things. And sometimes people fear death so much that it just messes up the way that they live today because they're scared of dying.
Well, let's listen to the last part of my talk with Rabbi Kopelman, which talks about the fear of dying.
One last question. Do you find many of your older congregants are afraid of death?
I wouldn't doubt that they are, but I don't hear it expressed that way. I think you see it more in the things that they do, the things that they're trying to get done as they sense their own mortality, that there's still things needed to be accomplished before that final moment. And sadly, when that final moment happens, we have to remember in some way that mortality is the price we pay for being human, that the world would be a vastly different place if we didn't have to go through that. And we're told in the Bible, anyways, that this is the best of all possible worlds. If God saw everything that was created, and behold, it was all very good.
Amen.
Mm-hmm.
Amen. Well, approaching death is, and fear of dying, and I wouldn't necessarily say fear of dying, because I haven't seen that in my older patients and my oldest patients.
Right.
So the whole area of approaching death, I think it's better to talk about it in terms of the period of approaching death rather than the fear of dying period.
But it's got a lot to do with your attitude as a physician, too. And then our attitudes as to how we embrace it. I explain it to people, why don't you prepare for your death? Even plan your own funeral.
Right.
They had a movie out where a woman did that. And it was, and she talked about it all the time. And people got mad at her because she talked about it. And she explained, she said, how can you not want to plan your funeral? You know, where you spend 2 or 3 years planning a marriage and you didn't stay married 5 minutes. You're going to be dead for a long time.
That's right.
You may as well put some planning into
that's
it.
That's right. And do it the way you want that, it
well,
to be done.
Well, that's true. I have my celebration of life service written. I wrote it about 15 years ago. I did a program, a series called Heaven, What's It All About? And in it, we talked about, over the 6 weeks, of everyone has a different idea of what heaven is. But the most important thing is, how do we live our life today? And how are we preparing for it? And it's our attitudes, living life to the fullest, living in joy. And writing, when you talk about it, yeah, planning it, writing.
Yeah.
I have certain hymns I do not want sung at my celebration of life
service.
Bring
that up in here.
Well, you know, and it need not be, you know, an expectation that that there's a heaven even.
No.
Some people clearly feel that once they die, they're
they
dead. But their legacy, how people live on, they live on through other people, the people that they've touched during their lives. So even if you don't necessarily believe in the afterlife as
right.
an entity in and of itself, you do live on through the people that you met and worked with and taught and annoyed and and bugged. And,
yeah.
And the number of people I bug about smoking, those 20, 30-year-old people that I see smoking and say, come on, you got to do something about it. I don't want to give you another lecture, but...
But
I'm just hoping somewhere down the road it'll stay with
it'll
them.
Stay
and at
again.
One point, it might be the tipping factor in getting them to stop.
Then you got your reincarnation, folks.
Well, that's right.
Well, that's true,
people
too.
People that are coming back as dog, cats, and cows.
Well, that's right. You know, there's all different religious beliefs.
Yes.
And you know, my feeling is, you know, we need to respect everyone's beliefs. And the goal, though, is to be spiritual. How to live a life where it has true meaning.
Yeah. You know, when you say that, I was in a group one time, and somebody observed the group. And one of the individuals stood up and said that I believe in my higher power, and at this point, my higher power is that light bulb. And he said, why didn't you straighten him out? I said that was a big change from what he thought his higher power was last week.
Mm-hmm.
So even Solomon had trouble with his higher power. He saw the sun, he said, that's God. Then he saw the moon, he said, that's God. And he kept searching. Mm-hmm. So as long as people
are
searching, let them search.
Well, the word Israel, Yisrael, means struggle with God.
Yeah.
But we have to be intentional about taking the time to do it and not just have it be a fleeting thought.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, part of the reason I'm doing this radio show, I just felt compelled to try and get the word out to more people than I could reach in giving an in-person lecture or through my day-to-day activities as being a doctor for specific patients. And I could have relaxed and not, you know, spent my Mondays frantically trying to get together the show and getting down here on time to meet my guests at Spot Coffee next door.
Yeah.
But I just felt compelled that was something I needed to do. Answering email, helping people that way. I just feel compelled to do those kinds of things.
That's exactly how I felt about doing this column in the new newspaper that's out after 50. 21st century spirituality, faith in action. When we have a spiritual dimension in our life and we develop it, we are called to faith in action and doing something to help other people. And that, it doesn't matter what age you are or what your abilities are, you can always do something for someone else.
Absolutely. And Dr. Starr, I commend you because you are a new wave, a new age of physician and doctor, because you are embracing spirituality and allowing it to influence not only the lives of your patients, but the lives of those that you come in contact with. And it is so important as we prepare people for the next phase of their life to realize that this life is not all that there is. And that even though we're not what we used to be, we can still expect, as you say, a lot out of life. And, I mean, even in the church we say, if I can't say a word, I'll just wave my hand. There's always some kind of action that we can do. If we can't walk, then we can call people on the phone. We can have a phone ministry. There are so many different things we can do instead of folks just giving up. I like the path of transformation where it talks about how healing ourselves can change the world.
Now, this is a book written by Shakti Gawain. Why don't you say a little bit about that?
I like it because it talks about the different changes that we go through. And Deepak Chopra says that we're an ageless body and a timeless mind. And our mind is so much stronger than our body that David talked about it, and Paul experienced out-of-body experiences, that even though my body can't do these things, I can still visualize them with my mind. So no matter what age you are, you should still make goals. You should still plan for things. Mm-hmm. You should still open yourself up to healing. Because if it doesn't happen in this body, then it'll happen in your mind and in your soul. To live is Christ, but to die is gain, as the apostle said. He said, if this earthly tabernacle be destroyed, I have another building, building not made with hands, eternal in the heaven. That lets us know that as we move through our transformations, that each time our affirmation changes. And there's always something else to look forward to. The person that's dangerous is somebody that has no reason to get up in the morning.
And every morning when we do get up, we make the choice of how we're going to live that day.
Yeah.
Either to be mopey about everything and poor me, or to be excited about the day and what adventure is going to happen today.
And what adventure, and how can we reach out to our fellow man and maybe strive to do one good thing for someone else every day as a simple goal?
Well, I think you do it. And it's all about attitude. As we learned at Grace Manor one time, and we had an elderly lady that came in, and we took her into a room, and she talked about how beautiful the room was. And she said, this isn't your room yet. And so we took her into a room. She said, oh, this is really beautiful. This is the best room I've ever seen. And she just excited everybody around, and she talked about the room. And then later on, we found out the lady was blind.
How about that?
She saw it inwardly, and she could feel it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Carol, Reverend James, for being here today.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
It was a great discussion. Thank also Gordon Lightfoot for his break song, "Rich Man Spiritual," and. This is Dr. Rob Stahl. Next Monday, the topic will be Getting the Word Out, focusing on publications and media aimed at the senior population. My guests then will be Bonnie DeGweck and Phyllis Gorski, publishers of After 50 magazine. I'll see you next week.
Many years from now, will you still be sending me Valentine? Birthday greetings, bottle of wine. If I be out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me?